Among those confirmed dead in Haiti is the Archbishop of Port-au-Prince, Joseph Serge Millot. His body was found in the ruins of the Archbishop's offices. He was 63. Father Charles Robez is the pastor of St. Clement Church in Fort Lauderdale. He grew up in Haiti and knew Archbishop Millot. Father Robez, welcome to the program.
Yes, thank you.
And what can you tell us about Archbishop Millot as a man of faith and as a man of Haiti?
What we can say about him is a very holy priest and a wonderful servant of the people of God and a faithful servant of the church in Haiti. And I knew him as a priest, somebody who was very devoted, respectful, quiet, but clever.
Can you think of a moment that you shared with Archbishop Millot that comes to mind as you think now of his death?
When I knew him, I was a leader in the youth movement, as a leader of the youth Eucharistic movement in Haiti. And he was one of the good priests that I know and good standard that I admire his work. I remember a few times that I met him at the seminary. He's another person who talked too much. You cannot go by him to not admire him, because his very presence is so comforting. You don't need it to open his mouth to feel that you have his support, that you know that he loves you, that you know that he appreciates and supports you.
His presence, his image within the Catholic community in Haiti, mm-hmm. as the Archbishop, would have been huge, I imagine.
Oh, it's a big impact right now, because among the priests and the faithful, knowing that we are in the midst of a disaster, and the disaster we lose our father in faith. It's something more added to what we to our loss.
You'll be leading a service at your church in the Haitian community there in Fort Lauderdale tonight. What will be your message in the sermon?
Our message tonight is in the midst of this disaster, this message of comfort, to know that we are, not only that we have the support of all the international community, but also that we are here for each other, and that the best way we can support each other in prayer.
Father Robez, thanks very much for talking with us.
You're welcome.
That's Father Charles Robez in Fort Lauderdale talking about the Archbishop of Port-au-Prince, Joseph Serge Millot, who died in the earthquake there.
We'll bring you more coverage of Haiti throughout today's program. The magnitude 7 quake struck yesterday just before 5 p.m. in Haiti. At this point, details remain sketchy as to how many people are dead and how many homes and buildings have been destroyed. The UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon says Haiti is now facing a major humanitarian emergency. The U.S. has sent an aircraft carrier toward Haiti to help in relief efforts, and military officials say U.S. Marines may be sent in as well. The American Red Cross says it has run out of supplies, and other aid organizations are in dire circumstances. This is All Things Considered from NPR News.
We're now going to a story in Uganda that begins here in the United States. Homosexuality is an issue that has divided Christian churches here. Some American evangelicals have taken the culture war to Uganda, that with potentially deadly consequences. NPR's Barbara Bradley Haggerty tells the story.
To understand why Uganda is considering a bill that imposes the death penalty or life in prison on gay men and lesbians, you need to know the story of King Mwanga. In 1886, Uganda's king ordered some 24 male pages to have sex with him, and when they refused because of their Christian faith, he ordered that they be burned to death. Every June, Ugandans celebrate a national holiday in honor of the Christian martyrs and deploring the pedophile king. Into this climate stepped Scott Lively, an American evangelical who brought this message to a family life conference in Uganda last March.
Male homosexuality has historically been not adult to adult. It's been adult to teenager, adults sodomizing teenage boys.
Afterwards, Lively spoke to the Ugandan parliament about what he calls the dangers of the gay agenda. A few months later, a bill was introduced to execute people for some homosexual acts. Lively says he thinks the bill goes too far.
But the fact that they're willing to stand up and say, no, we are not going to let you homosexualize our country, that's a step in the right direction. And I hope that that would spread to other countries.
Now, Lively is considered a fringe player in the American culture wars. But in recent years, mainstream evangelicals in the U.S. have forged close spiritual and financial ties with their biblically conservative African brothers. Dozens of Episcopal churches have moved under the authority of Anglican bishops in Uganda, Nigeria, and Rwanda over the gay issue. Jim Naughton, a former canon in the Episcopal Diocese of Washington, D.C., says their message plays one way in the United States, but differently in a place like Uganda.
They are showing up in rooms filled with gasoline and throwing lighted matches around and then saying, well, I never intended fire.
Now many U.S. evangelicals, including Scott Lively, say they are mortified by the death penalty provision. Naughton doesn't buy it.
I think if they were mortified, they would have been mortified immediately. Instead, they were mortified, two, 3 months into the campaign against this thing when it was getting real traction.
Megachurch pastor Rick Warren is a case in point. Warren has extensive ties with religious leaders in Africa, including Uganda, and initially refused to condemn the bill. Finally, 2 months after the bill was introduced, he urged pastors of Uganda to oppose it in a video message.
The potential law before your parliament is unjust, it's extreme, and it's unchristian.
If Rick Warren was slow to condemn the bill, other Christian conservatives have yet to do so, says Warren Throckmorton, who teaches psychology at Grove City College. He says the Christian groups most publicly tied to Uganda have been the quietest.
Joyce Meyer Ministries, for instance, they didn't want to comment. Oral Roberts University, they didn't want to comment. College of Prayer in Atlanta did not want to get involved, didn't want to issue a statement.
Throckmorton, a conservative evangelical himself, wonders what message that's sending to Uganda's religious leaders.
Silence is often interpreted as consent.
The question is, what's the most effective way to deal with it?
Martin Minns is bishop of the Convocation of Anglicans in North America, a group that broke from the Episcopal Church and is now aligned with African bishops. Minns says his group has been working behind the scenes to remove the death penalty from the bill. But he also says Uganda has a right to resist the wave of gay activism that he says is flooding in from the West.
It's hard for any of us who have not lived under colonial rule to realize how offensive it is for people who have won that freedom to now basically be told, you're fools, you're ignorant, one day you'll grow up and be like us. That comes across in a very patronizing way.
This week, Uganda's president called for the bill to be withdrawn. No matter what observers say, the story of Uganda is a cautionary tale of what can happen when the West's religious debates are transplanted to another culture. Barbara Bradley Haggerty, NPR News.
We go now to Rome, where Pope Benedict visits Rome's main synagogue on Sunday. The visit comes at a time of Jewish-Catholic tensions. One of Italy's top rabbis is boycotting that event. NPR's Silvia Pagioli tells us about the long history of troubled relations.
While workers prepare for the Pope's visit, guided tours of the synagogue are still underway.
The first time that the Jews arrived in Rome, we're talking about 161 before Common Era.
Yael Kalos says Jews arrived here long before the birth of Christ.
We have 22 centuries of uninterrupted presence in Rome.
Under papal rule, persecution of Jews alternated with relative calm. Until 1555, when Pope Paul IV ruled they shouldn't prosper alongside Christians. As infidels, he said, God condemned them to eternal servitude. He ordered all Jews in the Rome region be restricted to the 8-acre ghetto. Jews were not allowed to pursue education or practice professions and could leave the ghetto only between sunrise and sunset.
The main occupation for more than three centuries for the Jews of Rome was selling used clothes. Shmata, that's the Yiddish word? Okay.
Guide Kalal says Roman Jews were subjected to constant humiliations.
The main reason of the ghetto was not to kill the Jews. The Nazi is going to think about that later. The Pope wanted them to convert to Christianity by letting them live a hard life.
Jews were forced to listen to priests' sermons and at times even forced to convert. The issue of conversion still rankles. A cartoon in an Italian Jewish newspaper shows Benedict crossing the Tiber River on a tightrope, balancing with a pole, the word dialogue at one end, conversion at the other. The paper's editor, Guido Vitale, says these two contradictory aspirations undermine Jewish-Catholic relations.
Ma mi sembra che tutti...
We heard a variety of Jewish voices, and all agree that dialogue has value only if it's tackled with humility, honesty, and mutual respect, and without the presumption of converting the other.
Several recent moves have upset Jewish-Catholic relations. The revival of an old Latin prayer that calls for Jews' conversion, the lifting of the excommunication of a Holocaust-denying bishop, and Benedict's decision to put his wartime predecessor Pope Pius XII on the track to sainthood. Veteran Vatican analyst Marco Politi says Roman Jews in particular cannot forgive Pius's silence during the Holocaust.
Because during the war, there was a great deportation of Roman Jews practically directly under the windows of the papal palace. These Jews were kept by the Nazi troops. They stayed 2 days here in Rome, waiting for the train to leave for Auschwitz. And the Pope never spoke. He never said publicly, this has not to happen.
Of the 1,022 Jews rounded up by the Nazis on October 16, 1943, only 16 returned alive. Lisa Palmieri, the American Jewish Committee's liaison to the Vatican, says the Jewish-Catholic dialogue is essential for both sides, and it's crucial that there be no step backward.
It is hoped that the Pope will realize that the Jewish requests regarding Pius XII be honored.
Those requests are that beatification be postponed until the Vatican opens up its archives to independent researchers. Silvia Poggioli, NPR News, Rome.
This is NPR News.